Welcome to Ring of Fire. I'm Farron Cousins. Coming up on today's show, it is a week of nothing but Republican corruption. We, of course, have Republican Representative George Santos indicted on 13 different counts, including wire fraud, embezzlement, money laundering, the whole nine yards. We'll be going into detail about what's happening with that. And we also have former President Donald Trump held liable by a jury this week after the verdict came in the E. Jean Carroll assault and defamation lawsuit. Donald Trump will now be on the hook for $5 million, but he totally says he's gonna appeal, and I'll talk about his chances of success there. And of course, you cannot talk about Republican corruption these days without talking about Clarence Thomas, Supreme Court Justice, that is embroiled in a massive ethics scandal that, of course, only seems to be getting worse by the week. And coming up in today's members show, Tucker Carlson is trying to make a comeback, Donald Trump gets torched by the Wall Street Journal editorial board, and Fox News is facing a new lawsuit that threatens their financial security for the future. Folks, all of that is coming up on today's Ring of Fire, and don't forget, you can get the full show every week. Go sign up and become a member at rofpodcast.com. And for Ring of Fire every day of the week, make sure you follow us on YouTube at youtube.com/TheRingOfFire. Now, originally this week, I had planned on basically just doing a special on all of the corruption that has been revealed so far about Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas, and of course Neil Gorsuch, and now we've got Supreme Court Justice John Roberts, his wife getting tons and tons of cash to help lawyers get their cases in front of the court. A lot of corruption on the Supreme Court. But then, which shouldn't have come as a surprise to me, we had lots of other Republican corruption that kind of took center stage this week. But I have to point something funny out. If you were watching Fox News on Wednesday, the day after, of course, the verdict in the Trump E. Jean Carroll lawsuit, and of course the morning, really, that George Santos surrendered to authorities in New York, if you were watching Fox News, you wouldn't know any of that was happening. You know why? Because Fox News wasn't talking about that. I even put out a tweet showing the front pages of the websites of CNN, NBC News, which is MSNBC's website, and Fox News. Now, NBC News and CNN both had E. Jean Carroll and George Santos. What was all over Fox's front page? The press conference that Republicans were holding about Hunter Biden. Oh boy, was that a good one, right? I mean, horrible timing, obviously, but what are Republicans if not great deflectors? So they held this little press conference talking about all this alleged corruption of Hunter Biden and this web, as they described it, of LLCs where foreign nationals were paying money to the whole Biden family. So then reporters asked them, okay, like, do you have evidence directly linking any of this to President Biden? Well, no, but they're pretty sure, they said, that, you know, it's, you know, he couldn't not know that this was happening, right? It was the most pathetic thing I've ever seen, because they admitted that they don't have evidence of crimes. Now, they have plenty of evidence of things they don't like, you know, like Hunter Biden making money, which they're calling influence peddling. But they admitted openly in their press conference they don't have evidence of criminal activity yet, they said. Yet. You know, they're totally going to find it. Like, it's definitely there. They don't have anything linking it to President Biden, but they're going to find it, folks. Don't you worry about that. And that was it. That was their big press conference. It was a big dud. Nothing. They admitted they had nothing. They've just got, okay, Hunter Biden had some companies that made some money from overseas sources. It's technically not illegal. Even if Biden helped him get those jobs while he was out of office, it should be pointed out, that's not illegal either. I mean, even if he said, hey, do you know who my dad is? At the time when these business deals came about, Joe Biden was not the vice president of the United States anymore, nor was he a candidate for president in 2020 yet. That is the timetable that we're dealing with. And that's what everybody needs to realize with this Hunter Biden non-story. The timeline of these businesses includes the time after President Biden left office as vice president and before he started running for office for president. So anything that happened in that time period, Biden didn't hold office. So that's not illegal. And here's the other part of it, which I always say, and I'll point it out again. Even if Hunter Biden broke the law, wonderful. Try him. Put him on trial. If he's convicted, he's convicted. I'm not going to lose one second of sleep over that. If President Biden broke the law, impeach him. Remove him from office. I'm not going to lose any sleep over that either. I genuinely want people who break the law to face justice. It doesn't matter if there's a D by their name. It doesn't matter what their last name is. If you break the law, I'm sorry, you have to face the consequences, and I am not going to lose sleep over that. So Republicans can whine and moan and accuse Democrats of not caring about Hunter Biden all they want. The truth is, I don't care. I don't think it's a national story. If he broke the law, bring charges against him, put him on trial, convict him. Send him to jail forever. Honest to God, I could not care less about it. But the fact that y'all decided, as a party, as members of the House of Representatives, including, by the way, so-called moderate Nancy Mace, y'all didn't think it would be a smart idea to maybe postpone that press conference? I mean, one of your own members was still in court in Manhattan, and he had another court date later that day, exposing his corruption. And y'all didn't think that maybe it'd be a good idea that, you know what, let's push this back a day. You know, pretty much everybody in the country is going to be talking about George Santos. So maybe it'd be smart if we didn't bring all this so-called evidence against Hunter Biden public on the day when our guy gets arrested, the day after our leading presidential contender was found liable for sexual assault by a jury in New York. Maybe push it back a day, Republicans. But of course not. They have to try to distract. So not only did their distraction method fail, but even if they had had something worthwhile against Hunter Biden, it wouldn't have made headlines because everybody was already talking about George Santos and Donald Trump, which, after much, you know, consideration here, I think it's time that I go ahead and start talking about that too and move on from Hunter Biden. Hey, by the way, I suggest Republicans, maybe y'all ought to do the same thing. Maybe a more worthwhile use of your time. George Santos, of course, Republican representative from the state of New York who turned a blue seat red, which will probably never happen again thanks to him, indicted on 13 different counts this week. As Vice reports, prosecutors accused Santos of embezzling campaign contributions to buy pricey designer clothes and using the money to give handouts to his friends. That would be the money laundering part. He also received $24,000 worth of unemployment during the pandemic, even though he had a job and was pulling down a salary, the indictment alleges. Then Tristan Snell, a lawyer and legal analyst on Twitter, he went a little further in depth. Santos created a phony 501c4 that could supposedly take unlimited soft money donations for independent expenditures. Then he took that money and spent it on himself for, quote, luxury designer clothing, credit card payments, etc. He fraudulently applied for and received unemployment benefits in 2020 during the lockdowns, even though he was employed at the time, defrauding the government out of another, you know, roughly $25,000. Then he lied on campaign finance forms requiring him to list out his income. He claimed he'd been making $750,000 a year from his DeVolder organization, which was a shell company. But he'd actually only made $25,000 in income and then another $25,000 from the fraudulently obtained unemployment benefits. He is also, of course, accused of lying to Congress about his personal finances. He is still a person of interest in the Seattle investigation in the credit card skimming scheme. So there's still that. I mean, the only good thing George Santos has going for him right now, actually, there's two good things. The first one, of course, is the fact that a couple weeks ago, he was able to settle the Brazilian case. Brazilian authorities agreed to a plea deal with him where they will not try to extradite him and prosecute him in exchange for Santos admitting that, yes, he stole checks from an elderly man and used them to make fraudulent purchases. There's kind of a pattern emerging here, right, folks? And, I mean, this whole scandal doesn't even get into the GoFundMe dog scandal. It doesn't get into the Amish dog breeding scandal either. So there's still other scandals out there that are actually being investigated. Like, we're only at the tip of the iceberg at this point with George Santos. And the most remarkable thing, the only other good thing he's got going for him, in addition to not being, you know, extradited to Brazil, is that Kevin McCarthy says he's going to stand by him. You know, he says, let's see how this plays out, is what Kevin McCarthy, Republican Speaker of the House, said after all this went down. Let's see how this plays out. Well, how it plays out is that your guy, a member of your delegation, is facing up to 20 years in prison based on the charges that he's facing so far. Again, I think there will eventually be more charges in the credit card skimming scheme, which is probably going to net you a lot more years. So that's how it's going to play out. You think for a second George Santos is not going to be convicted? Because I don't. If they have this much evidence against him right now, it is highly unlikely that they would take this chance if they were not certain that the evidence was so airtight that they could guarantee a conviction. Bringing charges against a sitting member of Congress is not something that happens frequently. Not at all. Not even close. So in order for the federal government to do this, and of course to ensure that the other side is not going to accuse them of weaponizing the justice system, they have to know for a fact that they are going to get this guy behind bars. So I firmly believe that when all of this is said and done, George Santos is going to prison. And Kevin McCarthy again has the audacity to say, let's see how this plays out. But there's a reason. There's a reason, of course, Kevin McCarthy doesn't want to jump to conclusions just yet and tell George Santos to go packing back to New York. And the reason for that, of course, is because right now, McCarthy only has a 5-seat majority in the House of Representatives. You kick Santos out, you think those people in New York in a special election are going to put another Republican in that seat? Hell no. That will not happen at all. So you're going to lose that seat, and your 5-seat majority drops down to a 4-seat majority. Now, that may not seem like much going from 5 to 4, but trust me, that is a massive loss for Kevin McCarthy. Suddenly, he has to worry about 4 Republicans flipping on any given vote. And if he loses control of that, as he remembers, he gave up the ability to maintain his speakership by allowing any one single Republican to put up an objection and then have him have to go through the process all over again. So Kevin McCarthy understands that he has no power. And if he loses even a single Republican seat, those other Republicans who didn't want him to be speaker to begin with are going to come at him guns blazing, and they're going to take his power away, and then he's back to just being plain old Kevin. Now, I think it's also interesting that Kevin McCarthy did also tell reporters that, hey, you know, I didn't even put George Santos on committees. Yeah, you did. Like, that is a flagrant lie. You did. George Santos was on committees to begin the year. George Santos voluntarily stepped down from those committees once the criminal investigations were announced. So Kevin McCarthy is not only standing by George Santos, he's lying to cover it up. You put him on committees. He voluntarily stepped down. Maybe there was some, you know, stuff happening behind the scenes where you forced him to do it. But now Kevin McCarthy is lying to the American public about what actually took place earlier this year. Things that are verifiable. If you have 5 seconds and an internet connection, you can look it up. Kevin McCarthy thinks you're too stupid to do that. Kevin McCarthy thinks the people talking about this issue aren't going to remember that. Well, guess what? I did. I'm sure a lot of people listening to this remember that too. That is what happened. But Kevin McCarthy is going to stand by George Santos because he cannot stand the thought of losing another Republican seat. That is not going to bode well for him as Speaker. I mean, hell, at that point, if four other Republicans get in trouble and they get expelled or arrested, whatever, suddenly he's not even in the majority anymore. That's a mighty big pill to swallow for Kevin McCarthy. So, of course, he is going to stand by George Santos. But it's not just Santos he's standing by. McCarthy also made it clear this week that he's standing by Donald Trump. Even after, on Tuesday, we got the verdict where the jury held him liable not just for the defamation, but for the battery of E. Jean Carroll in that Bergdorf Goodman department store dressing room in the early 1990s. Now, this one, I got to admit, I was always hoping, right, that Donald Trump would lose that case just because of the implications. It basically means that the jury believes Trump sexually assaulted her. I always wanted her to win it, but I always also said it is an uphill battle for E. Jean Carroll. Honest to God, like, this was Trump's case to lose, not E. Jean Carroll's to win, but it was Trump's to lose, because you have a 30-year-old accusation with no video evidence, no eyewitnesses. Trump refused to give his DNA. So all E. Jean Carroll had were her words and Donald Trump's words. But her words were so powerful and so moving for that jury that she prevailed. Trump's words were so damning that he failed. That's what blows my mind. You know, looking back at it in retrospect, even though I fully believe E. Jean Carroll, so please don't get me wrong on that, like, there's no way she should have won this case. Like, that was an impossible case to win, and she won. And her attorney, Roberta Kaplan, deserves tremendous credit for being able to do that. And at the same time, while we're talking about the lawyers, Joe Tacopina, Trump's lawyer, should probably be fired on the spot. He did such a horrendous job that it was worse than pathetic. Like, he didn't even try to be pathetic. That's how bad he was. Pathetic was out of his reach. Didn't call a single witness, didn't present a single piece of evidence, got in fights with the judge. The prosecution, or plaintiff, excuse me, their objections were mostly sustained. He was trying to bring up irrelevant information. He was trying to confuse the jury. None of that worked. He just did the worst job that I think I have ever seen a lawyer do. It was so bad that it should be put in the Trial Lawyer Hall of Fame as the shining example of what not to do. But Trump, even before the verdict came out, said that no matter what the verdict was, good or bad, he was going to appeal it. And his appeal is going to be dead on arrival. In order to have a successful appeal in a civil jury trial, he would have to prove either that there was just absolute gross malfeasance with the whole process, which would include the judge, and that is something Trump does claim, even though there's no evidence to back that up, or you would have to prove that there was some kind of jury tampering that took place in order to overturn a jury verdict. And in a civil case like this, that is not something that really happens in the United States. Even Fox News' own legal analyst, Jonathan Turley, admitted that. He's like, a jury verdict like this is pretty much ironclad. The only thing he could possibly do with an appeal, if he's successful at all with it, would probably be to reduce the amount he has to pay E. Jean Carroll. Now, of course, technically that could also work the other way, because an appellate court could look at that and be like, well, listen, due to what the jury said you did, we don't think $5 million is enough. We're going to make you pay $8 million. So technically it could go the other way, but getting that actual verdict itself overturned is not something Trump is going to be able to do. But he's already laying the groundwork for it, because in addition to coming out and attacking the judge and swearing that he's never met E. Jean Carroll in his life, he also said that he was denied the opportunity to speak or to defend himself. He literally said he was not allowed to defend himself. Now, I don't know if you were paying attention to most of this last week. I mean, I know it's been a hell of a couple weeks in terms of news here. But Donald Trump last week, while he was on his trip to Ireland and Scotland, visiting his golf courses, playing golf, he got so mad last week that he said, "I'm going back to New York so I can confront my accuser," he said. Now, ironically, or actually not ironically, I think he did it intentionally, he said he was going back to confront his accuser after the trial had effectively ended. His side had already said, "We're not calling any witnesses," so basically the defense rested. The prosecution had already rested. And it was after all that took place that Trump said, "Oh, I'm coming back to testify," hoping, of course, that he clearly would not be given the opportunity to do it because both sides had rested. Closing arguments were going to come up, you know, this past Monday, which then was the next Monday. But the judge, Lewis Kaplan, decided to be a little smart with it, and he said, "All right, you want to come back? I'll give you till Sunday evening at 5 p.m. to tell me that you want to testify, and if you do that, I will postpone the closing arguments, we'll postpone the jury deliberations, I will amend the entire trial calendar and reopen, essentially, the case, so that you can come and testify. You told international reporters over there in Ireland that you were coming back to testify. Come on, testify. Show me what you got." And then Sunday evening, 5 p.m. rolls around. Donald Trump hadn't said a word. He chickened out. He didn't want to go and confront her. He just wanted to be able to use that as an excuse to appeal the ruling. And even though the whole world knows that Donald Trump was given that extension and chose to decline it, he is still claiming on Truth Social that he was not given the opportunity to speak or to defend himself. So if that is going to be the basis for his appeal, it is going to get laughed out of court. The appeal will not be taken up. And I hope that is what Donald Trump chooses to do, because again, the entire world knows that that is not true. Everybody knows it. It's no big secret. That is what happened. You were given the opportunity. You said no. You deal with the consequences. So the big question, I think, at this point is, how is this going to impact the 2024 presidential race? I mean, we now have the Republican frontrunner who likely raped somebody at this point. Let's be clear. Let's say what it is. He likely raped her. That is what the jury determined. Now, they could not prove beyond a reasonable doubt, obviously, that she was raped, but he's still liable for it. Liable for the sexual assault, battery, not necessarily rape. And yes, there is a distinction between the two, but in the eyes of the voters, they now know that a jury, which included at least one hardcore Trumper, we do know that, even that person looked at this and was like, "Oh, he did it." Yeah, that's probably not going to sit well with those suburban women that are already one of Donald Trump's weakest voting demographics, and that also happens to be a demographic that he is incapable of winning an election without. So good luck with that, going out there trying to appeal to women when they all know what a jury basically found you guilty of. Even though it wasn't a criminal case, of course, it was a civil case. I think it's important to know that Trump is going to go out there as a candidate accused of this horrendous act that a jury found him liable for and try to attract new voters. It blows my mind to think that that is where we are at in this country. But the latest polls, not necessarily after the E. Jean Carroll verdict, but prior to that, after, of course, the New York indictments, polls out late last week show that Donald Trump is not just the front runner in the Republican Party. He pretty much already has that nomination on lockdown. 60% of Republican voters say they're voting for Trump in the Republican primary, even though a majority of them also say, "We don't want Trump to run again." Okay, you don't want him to run again, but you're going to vote for him anyway. So I don't know if that shows that you're a hypocrite or if that just means you hate those other people running in your party that much. Either way, not a good look for the Republican Party, because obviously Trump's hardcore supporters are going to stand by him through all of this. Trump could walk up to a group of Trump supporters, murder one of them in the middle of all of the others, and all of the others would say, "Oh, wow, I've never seen somebody murder somebody so greatly. You're still the best. Yeah, he probably deserved it, right? Like, there's nothing he can do to make them not love him. But the people who are on the fence, those are the ones that are going to be determining this election. And if they believe that Donald Trump raped somebody, I have to imagine it's not going to make them more likely to vote for him in 2024. And as I mentioned, we cannot talk about Republican corruption this week without addressing Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas. And I do have to say, I mean, look, George Santos was held accountable this week. Donald Trump was held accountable this week. Can we get the hat trick? Can we get the trifecta? Can we get that triple crown? Can we get Clarence Thomas held accountable? Yeah, probably not. I hate to burst your bubble here, but there is not much we can do. Now, there was a new report this week from the Lever News, which, by the way, if you're not reading Lever News, you need to do that. They're absolutely phenomenal. I believe it was David Sirota that started it. They've got Andrew Perez there. They've got some amazing, amazing reporters doing wonderful work. So please, they're not sponsoring or anything. I haven't even talked to any of them, but they do amazing work and I love them. But anyway, they had a report out this week that laid out the fact that Clarence Thomas, who swears he never ruled on anything having to do with his billionaire buddy Harlan Crow that has spent millions of dollars on him and his kid. Turns out he did. And the Lever pointed out that it wasn't just Harlan Crow. It was a payment sent by a group in 2010, bankrolled by Harlan Crow, led by conservative judicial activist Leonard Leo, who was helped by then GOP pollster Kellyanne Conway, sent over $100,000 and then several other payments of tens of thousands of dollars to Jenny Thomas. And because of that, Clarence Thomas, somehow, some way, magically, according to this report, suddenly shifted his views on certain legal issues, which includes a legal issue up in front of the court right now about who has the power to interpret the laws. It's called the Chevron Doctrine, and it basically says that the executive branch interprets the laws, not the judicial branch. In the early 2000s, Clarence Thomas actually issued an opinion supporting the Chevron Doctrine, that yes, it's the executive branch that interprets this stuff, not us. But now he switched. And it's because reversing the Chevron Doctrine, of course, would benefit his billionaire buddies like Harlan Crow. And that story, it's a very complicated one. I just trying to distill it down to its most basic points so that it's easier to understand without having to spend, 2 hours talking about it here. Hopefully, though, I am actually going to reach out to some of the folks at the Lever and see if they will come on this podcast in the future to talk about it, because I think it's important and we do need to flesh it out a little more. The fact of the matter is, though, we have a Supreme Court that is corrupted to its core. And it's being led in that corruption by Clarence Thomas. We also know, of course, as I mentioned, Neil Gorsuch has been embroiled in this, accepting money in the form of a real estate purchase from a law firm that frequently goes in front of the Supreme Court, which Neil Gorsuch has ruled in favor of 8 different times. You also have Supreme Court Justice, Chief Justice John Roberts, his wife, accepting payments to place lawyers at prominent law firms who, of course, end up having business in front of the Supreme Court. To the core, man, to the core. And I do have to bring this up because there was actually a really great op-ed by Juan Williams this week where he pointed out, where the hell are the liberal justices on this? I mean, I know we only have 3 of them on the Supreme Court these days, but why are they not speaking out? And I think that's a worthwhile question. Where the hell are they? Where is Justice Sotomayor? Where is Justice Kagan? Where are they? Where's Justice Jackson? They're not speaking out about this, and that is terrifying. And Jackson, of course, has been on the Supreme Court the least amount of time. So she really wasn't there for this corruption. She's new to the club, but why are the others not speaking out? Right, these are people y'all have now worked with side by side for years. It is your responsibility to do this. And so the best we can hope for at this point, you know, if these liberal justices are not going to speak out, which clearly they're not, and that pisses me off. And to be honest, pretty much everything pisses me off these days. Is you got Senate Democrats, you know, they're trying to do, they've sent a letter to Harlan Crow, you know, Clarence's billionaire buddy, saying, give us a list of all the things you've paid for Clarence Thomas. It's like, okay, I mean, that's a start. But I don't want to sound like a fatalist on this, but I do have to be honest with you. That's my job. Sometimes I have to tell you things that you may not want to hear, but you need to hear because it is the truth. And the truth is, given the numbers that we have in the House and the Senate, there's nothing we can do about the Supreme Court. It doesn't matter. None of this matters. And that's, I think, what pisses me off the most about talking about this. And, you know, you may get mad because I'm giving you this horrible news. But think about it for a second, folks. We can't do anything about it. They can't impeach Clarence Thomas. They don't have the numbers to do it. You think a single Republican in that Senate, while Joe Biden is president, is going to let a conservative get kicked off that court to be replaced by a liberal? Hell no. That is never going to happen. It's also not going to happen because we don't even have the numbers in the House to do an impeachment. So it's not even going to make it to the Senate. Which means even if we got to the point with a Senate investigation where they're issuing subpoenas, and then the Supreme Court Justice, Clarence Thomas or Gorsuch or Roberts, whoever it may be, if they just say, I'm not going to comply, where's it going to go? Like, what court is going to be able to take up that case to force him to comply? The Supreme Court? Those are his friends. They can't all recuse themselves because then there is no resolution and he doesn't have to comply. Do you get the point? Like, because of the way everything is structured, there's literally nothing we can do. We don't have the laws in place to remove him for violating the laws. The U.S. Supreme Court doesn't even have a code of ethics to abide by. They don't. There's nothing we can do. And on that wholly depressing note, that is the end of the free portion of this week's Ring of Fire podcast. I'm sorry to just drop that horrible bad news on you and be like, well, see you next time. But that is the end of this week's free portion of the Ring of Fire podcast. But if you want the full show every week, plus access to the entirety of the Ring of Fire podcast archives, please sign up and become a member at ROFpodcast.com. It is your support that helps keep us doing this every single week. So please sign up and help support the show.